Good evening. This is Jean Bryant. This is the Trans Positive PDX show here on KBOO Radio out of Portland, Oregon. We talk about issues related to trans community. And this evening, hosting with me is Emma Lugo.
Hi, I'm Emma. I use she and her pronouns.
Nicolette Schweizer.
Hi, I'm Nicolette. I use AM pronouns.
And our guests this evening are Mick Chan.
Hi, I'm Mick. He, him.
Okay. And Sheila Manger.
Hi, I'm Sheila. I go with she and her pronouns.
Okay. And Nicolette's father, Greg, may be joining us during the course of the show. Tonight, we want to do thematically something that we've done, you know, a lot in the past. It's been a little while, but friends and family, and specifically in honor of Father's Day coming up, we wanted to have a group conversation about our lived experience and our relationships with our fathers as trans folks. And so this can be, I know it is for me. I know it is for me. It's a triggering topic. There's a lot of history and a lot of stress in my story, my relationship with my father. And it's possible, I just want to give a content warning to folks out there that this may be a little bit emotional and upsetting for a lot of us. I think it's pretty generally the narrative that our relationships can be a little strained and stressed. So,
well, Gina, it really varies. Like it's just completely different for everyone.
Yes, I understand that. Yes, thank you, Emma. So with that, I'd like to first invite our guests, and I want to invite Mick to speak first. Mick, tell us first of all kind of a little bit about your own personal, you know, trans history, so that we have some context, and then let's hear a little bit about you know, how things are going with your dad, if he's still around. I mean, tell us about your relationship with your dad.
All right. Well, context-wise, it's going to be a long in terms of my journey, but I was actually born and raised in the Philippines and moved to the States, almost 20 years ago, I guess 16, 20 years ago. So I am of Asian background, but my family really is, nomadic in a way. So I would say culturally, my relationship with my father, it was probably interesting that when I did, my father was obviously shocked. But my relationship from him from the very beginning was strained. So my family is nomadic, but in terms of culture, I'd say we're more like Asian in a way where, we don't talk about feelings. It's very traditional in a sense. My father earns a living, provides for us. I actually grew up with my grandmother. So my relationship with my dad and my mom is pretty distant from the very beginning. But I have very vivid memory of how I actually did not like my father, how I'm a middle child and I tend to be, you know, hard to control. I have two sisters, so I'm the middle child. And so I was the only one who got spanked. I got whipped with a belt. And for some reason, I'm always given the harder chores at home. So I've hated my father, actually. And I remember, like, one time, like, wishing he was dead. Because I just felt like, you know, I was just frustrated with my father. But, you know, after coming out, I would say he did accept me for being me, that he has a son. And I remember when we went to see relatives, and he told me, you don't have to be cautious. You know, just be yourself. And so for me, that was a surprise of this man that I hated when I was growing up end up being accepting. So I still don't have the best relationship with my father. It's just that, you know, we're not used to really opening up in terms of our feelings. But I think the most important part is that he does accept me. I said I came out to my dad at 30, and I was already 3 to 5 years post-op at that time. It was like meeting a stranger. You know, because I look completely different. And, you know, it was kind of very casual. Like, oh, you know, it's like meeting somebody new that you do know. So it was kind of awkward for a day or two. And then he approached me and said, he had a feeling that I was different. So he, you know, he was just basically, it took him a couple of days to.
Let's hear from Sheila Mangert now, our guest Sheila. Sheila, tell us about kind of set the context for the relationship with your father. Give both a little bit of history, you know, and moving up into current relationship.
Oh, thank you, Jin. Well, I'm the guilty one for suggesting the topic, because what I had in mind was that we are still a patriarchal society, and we are also, especially if we are trans-fem folk, what we are doing is that we are, in a sense, swimming upstream against what we were told to be. And so if there is going to be a problematic relationship, it's quite often going to be with our fathers, because on the one hand, these are the people that play a huge role in our lives. And at the same time, if there is any sense of disappointment of expectations, sometimes it hits fathers hardest. And therefore, my presumption was that was going to reflect back on us and how we related to our own transition. And so that was my kind of theory behind what I was hoping we would be able to discuss tonight. And the other issue was that I thought, how much does that affect our own transition process? How much are we still playing old tapes of how we were supposed to, what we find ourselves becoming? as we go through transition.
Yeah, and as a fellow trans femme, as another trans femme, I completely understand, you know, what it is you're postulating there. The interesting thing is that the perspective, you know, both, you know, I mean, hearing from Mick and hearing from Nicolette, that, you know, because these are different perspectives and there are lots of different perspectives on this. It's interesting, but yeah, acknowledging the trans femme, you know, situation in this patriarchal society, I completely agree.
Well, my name is Greg Schweizer, Nicolette's dad.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask him to give his pronouns. That's what we all usually do. I know he uses he, him pronouns, so I'll introduce that part for him. Okay. So, rather than delve into too many family details, I'm just going to be talking about the context of my transness and my coming out specifically. I mean, in my case, my coming out story was a little bit funny. I think I'll start with, you know, how exactly I knew, because I know I've talked a bit about my story on this show before. But, you know, I knew from a very young age that I was non-binary. I didn't know the words for it, but I knew that's what I was. But I kind of felt like I was pressured by everyone around me to be very feminine. And I know definitely my parents played a part in that too. I know that they didn't have any harmful intention behind that, but because I felt like everyone was kind of pushing me to be this very girly girl that I, you know, played into the part. And I tried so hard to convince everyone that I was this very, very feminine girl. I guess because I was so afraid of people finding out that I really wasn't, and I didn't know how people were going to react. And so I remember when I did come out, you know, my family was all very surprised because they were like, oh, but you always seemed so girly. And, you know, I didn't know how to explain. Well, that's because I felt very pressured to be girly. I felt very pressured to display myself as a girl, even though I knew I wasn't one. So the actual story of how I came out was kind of funny because it was not like I planned to come out. I didn't even know if I would ever tell my family at all. But it just kind of happened sort of accidentally. So what had happened was I and one of my partners at the time were going to the Trans Pride March in Portland. My parents and brother were in town at the time and they wanted to visit with me. So, you know, I said, well, can I bring my friends and we can, you know, visit with you at your place real quick. But then, we need to go to this Trans Pride March. And, you know, my dad said, okay, we can drop you off there after that. So we went over to their little condo and, you know, we were talking about how we're going to the march after that. And my brother asks, well, why are you guys marching in the Trans Pride March? And so I figured, well, I guess now is as good a time as ever to tell them. So I just went, well, we're transgender. And yeah, everyone was very confused. You know, there was a lot of what, but you don't think you're a girl, but you've always seemed like such a girly girl. And, you know, and I had to explain largely just, you know, what my gender was, because non-binary at this time still is not a very well known about thing. And I know that my family, they have been, at the time they had been familiar with the concepts of trans man and trans woman. They had no idea what non-binary was when I tried to explain it to them. But, you know, they said that they didn't really understand it, but that, you know, they seemed to be pretty accepting. You know, it wasn't like they were trying to convince me that I was anything otherwise. Since then, you know, they've mostly been supportive. They've been listening to my show, at least somewhat. Was someone else talking? I hear someone else going on. Okay, never mind. So I know we're still having the struggle of, I feel like they still don't really fully understand my gender. We still have misgendering happen every so often, but, you know, we're starting to get things down of at least understanding my new name and not dead naming me. That was an issue for a very long time. I don't remember the last time I was misgendered, but it has definitely happened since I came out. But, you know, and even after I've tried explaining it to them and they've tried listening to my show, you know, my parents have told me that they still don't really understand it, but they seem to be willing to accept who I am, even if they don't fully get it. So I think they're mostly supportive and we're trying to figure it out. Dad, do you have anything to add?
Well, I guess the reason I don't understand it is because I don't know it. But, you know, you are whatever you are. But I don't think I've ever tried to tell you to be something. You are whatever you are. I understand that there is I can see in society a range of genders, from really feminine women to really macho men to people who are in between. Sometimes you can't tell what gender they are. So I've seen that in society, but since I don't, since I feel male, I don't understand what it feels like to have the anatomy of one gender and feelings of a different gender. But, you know, whatever you say you are is fine with me.
Thank you for sharing that, Greg. I just want to remind our audience and all of our participants that no one here is a therapist, and so we're not going to be trying to do any kind of therapy here. But I really do want to thank you, Greg, for coming on Transpositive and sharing your perspective. It's really valuable to hear from a relative of someone who's on the show your authentic reflection. So thank you very much.
Greg, this is Jean. I have a question for you, sir. Can you share with us how Nico's transition has affected you in your role as the father in the family?
I would say not at all. I don't see any effect at all. You know, we talk about, yes, it's true. We always thought, everybody in the family thought Nicolette was a girly girl growing up. And that was how she appeared to us. And I contrast her with her older sister. Her older sister, who does identify as a woman, but was very, I almost feel like she was a son rather than a daughter, because her actions were things that stereotypically boys do. In sports and working on the farm. We had a farm in those days, race horses. And I always felt like her older sister was more like a son than a daughter.
Interesting.
But I didn't see Nicolette that way. And it's not because I tried to force her into a box. That was just what she seemed to be. And the things that she, you know, like she has, stereotypically, a very extensive dog life. That was what she always asked for Christmas and birthdays, was another doll.
Well, so again, none of us on here is therapists, but I do just want to thank you for that. And I'd just like to reflect that it's some of what you're saying is very common. It's very common for people to not necessarily recognize when their children are trans or non-binary, because they might make choices that seem typical of gendered expectations, but that doesn't necessarily reflect how someone is actually experiencing their identity as someone who's trans or non-binary. So, but it's really important to reflect on like your authentic reflections, and thank you so much. If it's okay, Nicolette, I'd like to make sure to give Sheila a chance to reflect on her relationships with her father too. If we could move to that, and then we'll come back. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Sheila, we were just getting started with chatting with you about your relationship with your dad. And the reason that we started doing this Father's Day show was because your dad just passed away recently.
Mm-hmm. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you really well.
Oh, good. Well, nothing forces us to reach a conclusion about our relationship with our dad like losing our dad. And so obviously it's been on my mind a lot lately, but it always was. And I think what I can say definitively is that I valued my relationship with my dad sufficiently that I would, in many ways, without denying how I felt, I would tie myself into pretzels if I had to sustain that relationship. And that was because it meant a lot to me. It was something that I grounded not just my gendered self, but my whole self on my admiration for my father. And because I had that admiration, I wanted that connection. And in spite of the fact that occasionally we would have outbursts and blow-ups over gender issues, I can honestly say that for many years, he was my most faithful correspondent. He would cut little articles out of newspapers on financial matters and things, and we would have great discussions. And he could use me as a sounding board for business decisions, and I was able to help him in that way, which was delightful for me because it demonstrated competence. And one of the things I think a lot of times happens to us is that we experience rejection of our gender issues as being a global rejection of who we are as people and of our value as people. And so that when we would fight ever, it was because I felt devalued and he could wound me deeply if he did devalue me. And so we finally, I think, found ways to negotiate neutral ground without making it a formal treaty. And I think that was a benefit because as I look back now, I'm very grateful having lost him. I'm very grateful for all those times when it worked very well. And the one times that it did not, I'm willing to write off as being the cost of living in an imperfect world with imperfect relationships. I tried not to press the issue and ever get to the point where we could say, you know, formalistically, you know, how do you feel about this or how do you feel about that? And what were your expectations of me or did I disappoint you? I never asked the critical questions, somewhat maybe for fear of getting an answer that I wasn't ready to accept, but also because, as I said, it was a shaky alliance and I wasn't willing to take the risk of compromising it. And so I think when I suggested the topic tonight, what I was hoping for is that I'm generalizing a little from my own experience to thinking that as transgender folk, our relationship to how we define the sexes not only tells us where we are on the playing board of life and our own gender presentation, but it goes far beyond that. What are we looking for in a mate? What are we looking for friends? What are we looking for a community? And so the relationship with a father is critical to that very constellation of other relationships. And that, I think, was something that in my own curiosity, I wanted to hear from people. and see, did that mirror my experience, or how was mine different from theirs? And I thought it would be provocative, if nothing else. So that's why I threw it into the mix tonight.
Thank you, Sheila.
Yeah.
I would just like to also put in a disclaimer that it's important to acknowledge that there's lots of people who don't have a father, and including lots of trans and non-binary folks who don't have fathers, or they have two mothers, or they have all kinds of other situations besides having a father. And so I just want to acknowledge that reality. But at the same time, we're also making space tonight for people who do want to talk about their fathers. So
I was going to add one other thing, Emma. One of the other things is that it's interesting that literature is my avocation, and I thought it's no accident that my favorite works of literature are literally about the search for a father. James Joyce's Ulysses, that's the whole plot of the whole book. And Thomas Wolfe's Look Homeward, Angel is the same thing. And I think that cannot be an accident that these are my two favorite books. So I think sometimes they use the word father haunted, and I think that's how I feel all my life.
But Jean, so you're the host tonight, but no one has asked you yet. Would you like to share anything about your father or your relationship with your father?
Well, Emma, first of all, you're doing a wonderful job, a much better job than I would have done. And so just keep going with the flow, Emma. You're doing great.
This is an open collective, Jean. So we're all hosts.
The situation for me, I grew up in the 1950s and 60s, and my father passed away 30 years ago. So I don't have anything to relate in terms of my post-transition. What I do have to relate is the effect of my childhood, because I am one who began to express my gender very early, and the relationship with my father was very strained. It's very triggering for me. I have a lot of childhood, trauma associated with that. Without saying that, trigger warning, folks. I was beaten because of my gender expression at a very early age. And so the relationship with my father was never satisfactory for him or I. I've carried that forward, through my entire life. That wounding, which Sheila referred to in her comments. And I think that this is extremely common in our community. It's certainly for those of us who are older and experienced the culture of the 1950s and 60s and 70s, that trauma, that childhood trauma, affects us. It affects to this day how I relate and how I function in the world. My father passed early in his life, so I never really had anything ongoing. I mean, it's been almost 30 years since my father passed. But I'll just say that even in the context of the 1950s, 60s, 70s, I've had to look back and try to place myself in his shoes and intellectually, logically, rationally, I guess my summary statement would be he probably saved my life. In many ways, he probably saved my life. At the same time, emotionally, existentially, spiritually, he might as well have buried a four-year-old girl alive. So there's this tremendous stress and dichotomy in the relationship. I guess I loved my father, but there was nothing I could ever do to please him. I could never get any affirmation from him, no matter what I did. You know, I was driven into the closet. I was beaten into the closet. And I think my narrative is maybe not universal, but it is very common for my age bracket. So can I forgive my father? Yes, intellectually I can. And I have. Spiritually, emotionally, those wounds just don't heal. They just don't heal. So there's my commentary. That's what I have to offer.
Thank you. You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Tonight we're talking with a full house. We have Jean, Emma, Nicolette, regular hosts, and we also have Nicolette's dad, Greg, is on, and we're also joined by Mick, a transmasculine person, and also by Sheila, a trans feminine, talking about our relationships with our fathers. So let's go back around to where we started with Mick. And Mick, is there more that you'd like to share about your relationship with your father, or reflecting on some of the comments that you've heard in the last half hour?
Yes, hopefully you could hear me better now. Recently somebody asked me what my values are based upon. And, you know, I thought hard and I realized, although I did not grow up with my parents, which, you know, let me say, did not grow up with my dad around, in the few times that I got to spend with him, I realized that I do have some, or I would say most of my innate values, or like maybe it's already subconscious. Like, what do I value in life? When I think of being a man, what it means. I realize I do base it on how and what my dad valued. For example, you know, not what he says, but, you know, how he interacts with people. You know, is he kind to his friends, or how does he deal with other people? You know, is he introverted or extroverted? You know, I realize I do pattern. I don't know if it's genetically or, you know, heredity that I am like my father, or is it just, oh, you know, when I was growing up, this is what you know, what I think men should be. Because, you know, when you're young, you don't have you know, a pattern. You basically follow, you know, your parents, you know, whether that's your mommy or your dad. So I realized whether or not I have a strong relationship with my father, unconsciously or subconsciously, I did inherit or pattern what it means to be, you know, a man, or what it means not to be a man through my father.
Thank you, Mick. Thank you for reflecting on that. Nicolette, Greg, have you heard anything in the last few minutes of conversation that you'd care to reflect on or add to previous to what you've said before?
Well, for me, the what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, all those things are really irrelevant. What's important to me, what I value, is I would like my children to be independent, self-sustaining, happy adults who have goals and can work towards those goals. Nicolette has some significant talents, and I've told her these things many times, and so she knows that. She's a phenomenal writer. She's a talented singer. She could be a songwriter even. And if I try to do any pushing of Nicolette, it's to try to push her to do something with those talents, which I think are significant. But I don't think, I mean, to me, it's not totally insignificant, irrelevant, whether she's a female or a male or anything in between. It has nothing to do with anything.
Thank you. Nicolette, would you care to comment?
Yeah. I mean, I do definitely appreciate hearing that now, because, you know, like I was trying to explain earlier, growing up, I kind of felt like I didn't have a choice in how I was supposed to present. I know, you know, my dad earlier was explaining that he felt like I was always presenting very girly. I was always, you know, playing with dolls and things like that. And my femininity is definitely a part of me, and it always will be. But I felt like when I was growing up, that was the only part of me I was allowed to externally embrace. You know, if I wanted to play with what were quote unquote boy toys, I'd have to go play with my brother. And I would like try and make sure that nobody even knew what I was doing, you know, playing with my brother and his Legos and cars and stuff, because I felt like I was supposed to be this very girly girl. I felt like that's what everyone around me expected me to be. And, you know, now I'm definitely finding later in life that maybe it was never really expected of me, other than maybe by some of my peers. But, you know, I definitely feel more free now to present as how I actually am, and to be more open as myself, and to take pride in what I've always known I was.
Thank you. And I want to acknowledge that not everyone chooses to use the preferred pronouns of our guests, and that it's important to acknowledge that, like, although we do really encourage people to use their preferred pronouns, we're also kind of opening our space up and, you know, accepting that that's not always going to happen. So, which is also one of the challenges with having family. Sheila, would you like to reflect some more on what you were kind of where you were going previously? I do want to say one thing before you go, Sheila, and that is that I remember now, you are right, I remember how important the relationship was between Stephen Dedalus and his father in Ulysses, and how, like, his father basically was very aloof and distant and very reserved in relationship to Stephen Dedalus, who was like this like brilliant intellectual who was just like engaged with all the world and seemed to always be this awkward person who just couldn't quite do things the way that he wanted his father to approve of.
The approval of our parents at these different stages of our life seems to be a theme that I'm getting out of our conversation. you know, and again, recognizing the different stages of our life. And then with the overlay of our gender expression and when we express that, how we express that begins to create a matrix of a very complex matrix of how these relationships happen across the spectrum.
Well, thank you. Going on with thanks for those thoughts on Ulysses. The idea of the search for a father, so that if you don't have the original dad, that sometimes you seek a substitute. As I was hearing the other discussions tonight, the thing that came through to me is I thought how both children and parents have a pre-existing template for how they think things are going to work out and how things, quote, should work out, and then how things are actually working out. And sometimes when those three things are not in sync, there's a tendency for everyone to blame each other, blame ourselves, and say, well, why isn't life emerging in the way that it should? And what I always got out of Ulysses is that Stephen Dedalus spends the whole day wandering around Dublin, and so does Leopold Bloom. And at the end of the book, these two form a bond between each other across the divide of that they are not actually father and son. And I think what I always wanted from my dad was to see me in a wider context. I always felt like he couldn't get a stable read on me. Like he couldn't take aim and say, okay, this is who you are. So he at times would overestimate what I could do and find me very competent. And other times he would say, I've obviously got to protect this person because this person cannot make it on their own. And it was hard. It was like a trombone. The slide was always moving in and out, and I couldn't get a stable image. So I was kind of always looking for a testimonial of some sort to have someone outside the family say, okay, this is who you have as a child. This is who you have. And I think it's surprising to me that near the end of his life, my dad was able to find my areas of competence and get a solid read on that. And I have something on my phone of his, one of his, even prior to his end and not anticipating that he was in bad health, I still keep messages for as long as a year on my phone for fear that someday I would not hear his voice. And playing it the other day, I played one of the very good ones, very affirming, and that meant a lot to me. And I think what I'm getting at here is that this search for affirmation, even if there was no father in our life, some authority, something beyond just our own sense of self-worth to say, you matter, we care for you. And some of that is a mothering function, and some of it is a fathering function. And we underestimate the power of fathers to be a nurturing source sometimes in our lives. And I think it's critical culturally. If I can be a little political here, I sometimes think that the idolization of our recent president, who I, of course, do not approve of, and my own animosity towards him, is that style of parenting is anathema to me. And yet I can realize that there are probably significant parts of the country that saw a leadership role where I did not find competence in any way, so that I could be judgmental of a father that would bring out the projected parts of me of what I think a father should not be. And I have found him trying to be a father.
You mean like a drunkard, crotch grabbing, liar, cheater, thief who manipulates the general public and abuses his powers and privileges, that kind of a father? Well,
if you're going to speak so in such a soft and gentle terms, I'm too much of a lady to say what I really think. Yeah.
Oh, come on. You know, the one with the most toys wins.
Okay. I'm not just not even going there. Thank you so much, Sheila. I really appreciate that. This has been such a great conversation. This is really a complicated conversation. You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. We've got about 10 minutes left in our show tonight. And tonight we're talking about fathers. And also one of the topics that we haven't touched on, which we're probably not going to get to tonight, is the fact that when people transition, a lot of people become fathers. And that's a whole nother thing too, when somebody knew you as one thing and then you became something else. So these are all really important conversations we've had on Nicolette, one of our main hosts, with Nicolette's father, Greg, and Sheila talking about Sheila's father who recently passed away, and Mick talking about his relationship with his father, and also Jean talking about her father who passed away about 30 years ago. So like I said, we've got about 10 minutes left. Let's just kind of open it up to everyone. Is there any like kind of some summarizing thoughts, or has this helped you to, you know, think more about your relationship with your father, or in your case, Greg, your relationship with your non-binary child? Do you have any concluding thoughts, anyone? Let's start with Jean, since we hadn't gotten to that. You were kind of next in the queue, Jean.
Well, Emma, I observed that Greg was unmuting and getting ready to speak. So I'd much rather hear Greg's perspective, because of all the perspectives in the conversation, I think his is probably going to be the most interesting one.
Well, it's probably not what you're looking for, but we had some stresses during Nicolette's childhood in our family. But it had nothing to do with gender identity at all. It had to do with the fact that I was working and commuting, working long hours and commuting long hours into Portland in those days. I had an hour and a half commute each way. And then we were trying to raise horses and not making money at it, and accumulating debt. All those things had stresses. And then Nicolette has a disability that we had to deal with as well, which has nothing to do with their gender identity. It's just, you know.
And we have another child with a disability.
Yeah, another child with disability, her brother. So all of these things pile on top of each other and add distress in the family. And none of it has anything to do with wanting someone to be something that they're not. But on top of all that, though, I remember a lot of good times we had, too. You know, like Nicolette and I have gone to concerts together, just the two of us. We share that music enjoyment. And we used to go to Blazers games together and had fun doing that. So I hope that I know that she thinks I was a difficult father because I was tough on her. I'm also tough on myself, just to be fair. But we also had a lot of fun times together too. At least that's what I remember.
Thank you, Nicolette. Would you like to respond?
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate putting it into context that, you know, our family life was definitely very stressful growing up for a number of reasons. And I'm not going to get into all of those reasons right now publicly. But, you know, we did kind of touch on some of them. And I'm not saying that my gender identity did contribute to those issues. It contributed more so to my mental health, my self-esteem, because I was trying to make myself be something that I wasn't, because I felt like somehow the world was expecting it of me. And I'm not blaming my parents for that. Like I said, it was just more of my environment that did play a role, but there were several factors involved.
Thank you. And I think it's important also to just acknowledge, again, a couple of things. One is that sometimes when we're having conversations with relatives, we're not going to get gendered the way that we would really prefer to. And that's just part of the reality of like dealing with biological family. And also that there's a lot of different perspectives on identity and what shapes identity. And you know, we're not sitting here as hosts of a radio show trying to pretend to be therapists. We're just having an open conversation. And you as the listener to KBOO and you as the listener to Transpositive can choose to interpret what you're hearing in your own way. So please take everything that you hear with a grain of salt. We just want to say that we really appreciate that Nicolette's father, Greg, did come on and share his perspective on the show. So.
Yes, absolutely. This is an open discussion from real people. It is not a lecture.
Yeah. Mick, do you have any like final thoughts you'd like to share about your transition and your relationship with your father?
Yeah, it's, you know, one thing to point out, because it got me thinking, you know, how, you know, my relationship is with my father. And I realized, well, what was his relationship with his father, you know, with my grandfather? Because it all kind of, you know, trickles down, right? Because, like, how would, you know, what kind of father would I also be in the future? It got me thinking that, my dad was, you know, distant because he did not know how to be a father, because he did not even see his own father until he was 20. So I realized there's a lot of, you know, historical, you know, learning. You know, we learn how to be parents from our own parents, and we see, you know, their shortcomings, And we recognize those. We are aware of those, and I think it shapes, for, at least for me personally, I'm conscious of what things that I did not like about my father that I hope I don't become in the future. But yeah, I guess no matter what, you know. There is that subconscious piece of learnings what we get from our father.
Thank you. So we've only got a couple of minutes left. I think I'd like to give the last couple of minutes to Sheila, Jean, and Nicolette, if that's
yes,
okay.
Yes, I concur. Let's give the airtime to our guests.
Yeah, Sheila, would you kind of like to summarize some of what you've heard tonight and sort of kind of close out our show with your own thoughts?
Thank you. As I was listening just now, I was thinking about, I wanted to think, what is it that makes negotiating transgender passages so difficult for families, so that these primal relationships that are so necessary to our sense of our own self and how we relate to the world, sometimes get dislodged. And I think a lot of it is that gender is one of our primary societal categories. We structure almost everything around gender. And as a result, everybody, transgender or not, deals with various gender cages that we're in. And trying to negotiate these passages is hard for everybody. Where it gets really hard for trans people is that we also are going through body changes, not uniformly. Not everybody goes this way, but some do. And those that go that way are transforming physically before other people's eyes. And there's always this sense of loss that, am I losing a person? Am I losing somebody that I knew? And of course, you're not, because we're all changing. The same, all we have to do is look at our high school yearbooks and then look at the way we look today and know that something happened. And so we lose something. We're transitioning through life, regardless of whether it's a gender transition. We are transitioning by simply aging and by altering our thoughts, by learning new things. We're changing. And sometimes that's threatening. A really solid relationship can attune itself to losing old things as new relationships move into our children's lives, as new ideas, new value systems sometimes supplant old value systems. All these things are changes, but we don't lose the person any more than we lose ourselves if we change our mind about something. So I guess what I'm getting out of tonight is the realness of our experience, how problematic it can be for trans folk, but at the same time, how very human it is, how much it's a part of what everyone goes through in life. It's just that ours is particularly poignant because oftentimes it involves interventions with the medical community, interventions with the projections of what society thinks trans people are. And we have to negotiate so much garbage dumped in our backyard that isn't even our garbage. And one of the struggles that we all have as a community is to affirm ourselves in the face of other people's projections on us, and to seek alliances wherever we can find them. But especially if we're lucky enough to find them in our nuclear families, that is a great blessing.
Thank you. And in the words of the immortal James Joyce, at the end of Ulysses, Molly Bloom says, "Yes, I do. Yes, I will. Yes, yes." I think that's a great way to end the show. You've been listening to Transpositive. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Gene.
No, go ahead. Finish.
You've been listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. We've been really honored to have all of our guests on. I'd like everybody to go around and just say one last word if they'd like to. And, if you want to say your name, your preferred pronoun, or if you just want to say thanks for being on the show or how people can get in touch with you, any of those things, please go ahead. Let's start with Mick. Mick, would you like to just say goodbye?
Yes. Well, thank you for having me on the show. This is Mick, he, him. I think this is a wonderful topic. Fathers are very influential on us.
Thank you so much, Nicolette and Greg.
One thing I was thinking about when Gene was talking about the 50s and 60s was so what she said was so true, that back in those days, you had to be normal or you're going to be picked on mercilessly. And anyone who was a homosexual would want not to be because it was so unacceptable. And same thing with anyone who was supposed to be a male and didn't feel like a male or female, you know, vice versa. People were just terrible back then.
Thank you, Nicolette.
I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who was here tonight. It was great talking with all of you. And I want to wish a happy Father's Day to my dad and all the fathers listening. Thank you.
This